This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the September 9th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. Let's just call this one the Back to School edition, or in the case of my daughter starting school for the first time edition. The usual crew will be joining me. As of this exact second, I'm here with Mike Hogan, who's out at his apartment in Queens. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. Yeah, Teddy is he's an old pro at school. This will be his third or fourth one. I've kind of lost count, but he starts today as well. He actually just has a small orientation.
On Mondays. That's what this is too. It's not really. We're calling it the first day of school, but what it really is more of an orientation. And when we were doing our production meeting for the show this morning, for once we actually did a little production meeting before the show instead of the more typical production meeting during the show. We were discussing the timing of today's broadcast, and Mike said, hey, we have to wrap by 10:30 because of this orientation. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's nice. Okay. And I was like, wait a second. Perrin has her orientation today, too, so I also need to wrap by 10:30, which is why we're going to be having a rather short show today, as I have yet to file my piece for the work that I actually get paid for, covering the tournament scene for Daily Racing Form. So there's a lot I need to accomplish in the next 90 minutes, and this podcast is one of them. I believe now we are also joined by the other member of the usual crew, Jonathan Kinchin. Jonathan, how are you today?
Oh, you know, football season started last night, so it was a little cloudy when I got going this morning. But I am I'm feeling good now, ready to run down a hill and up a hill at Kentucky Downs.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. I did want to ask you something. I got an email. My phone started bleeding at about 3 o'clock in the morning with a message from you saying you didn't think you were going to be able to attend the podcast this morning. I figured there was probably a story there.
No, I thought I was going to have a meeting that I wasn't going to be able to get out of. And then long story short, it wasn't nearly as much fun as you thought it was going to be.
Okay. I was hoping that you had, you know, bet it all on the Broncos and were partying throughout Austin last evening, but it doesn't sound like it's anything nearly that exciting.
No, not enough. No, not that much fun.
We spent the first 3 minutes of the show today talking about the fact that our kids have school orientation today. Is that the same thing in Texas as it is in New York? Is that something you've been involved in recently?
No, they've been started here. We start I've always noticed one thing about Texas from the other parts of the world. We start a little bit earlier. So we've been at school. The kids have been at school here for almost 2 weeks. My little guy started this week, but he didn't have that much fun with orientation.
I want to dive into these races pretty soon. We're going to have an abbreviated show today, so Mike and I can get to the church on time. But I do want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the DRF tournaments world. I've noticed there's been some change-ups in the way that the contests are in the contest sequences. For the first few months of life of the DRF tournament site, there was basically just one sequence that you play, whether you were doing a live tournament or the all-in tournament where all the picks have to be in before the first race. But it looks like things are being changed up. Mike actually pointed out to me that last weekend there were some Saratoga-only events, and for this weekend it looks like there are all-in events that are 9 races and then a full 12-race sequence for the live ones. I just thought that was kind of interesting, and I was curious, Jonathan, just to ask you as a tournament player, the different sequence of races, will that ever affect which tournament you choose to play in?
Yeah, absolutely. I love when I'm going to the track, especially, you know, I can think about my best examples like Santa Anita on a Friday when I'm coming into town. I love playing like all-ins when you're going to be there all day, because you can just pop in your picks from the morning, and you've got action all day long live at the track, regardless what's happening in your pocket. So it's one of my favorite things to do. It's also, you know, one of my favorite things to do is when you're playing in a tournament, you know, at Santa Anita or at, you know, Kentucky Downs or you know, wherever at Del Mar, is to get on and play an all, because you handicap the whole card, you've done the work, which we've talked about a bunch of times. You know, when I've done the work, I want to spread my opinion everywhere that I can and see what happens. So I love when they have them like that, because usually when they have the mixed ones, there's usually some track or some race I don't really want to have anything to do with. And so it works out. I mean, no offense. Well, I won't even say, but there's just some tracks I'm like, geez, this is in that one. So that can be annoying from time to time.
Yeah, well, and if folks agree and want to see more of the single track type tournaments, feel free to pass that feedback along via customer service or hit me up on Atlooms Boldly, and I'm happy to pass it along as well. The big events this weekend on the 10th, Saturday, we've got an NHC contest for $162. We're also running these qualifiers for next weekend's Los Alamitos tournament. I think that SoCal players in particular should take a look at trying to feed into that one for $50. We've also got feeders for next weekend's Gulfstream events and, of course, the Santa Anita Autumn Championship. And probably I buried the lead here. The biggest news for DRF tournaments this weekend, the return of the two-stage Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge format, which I love. You can start off for $100 on, I think it's Sunday this weekend. You can check tournaments.drf.com to confirm all these listings. But $100, finish in the top 10%, and advance to the round two at the end of the month, where up to, I believe, 8 players will win their full $10,000 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge entries. I've been noticing, Jonathan, I don't know if you have as well, these fields are getting fuller as the year goes on. We're really in crunch time here, and wouldn't you say it's about time for folks to get serious about getting their qualification on?
Yeah, well, two things. Yes, the panic starts to set in for a lot of people when they start to get a little bit closer. Saratoga and Del Mar are over, and if you look down and you haven't had your NHC qualification, I'm not sure how you expect to get to Vegas on your own dime and drink adult beverages with us while we're out there, so you better get busy. The second thing is that the round one and round two BCBC qualifiers have a special place in my heart, Pete. It always reminds me. It's like my little, every time I think about it, it's like our little anniversary, the first time we met.
I'd forgotten that. You were asking specifically about strategy for the two-stage qualifiers?
Yeah, I sent you a message and love was born.
More importantly, did you qualify? Did you get it done? I can't recall.
Absolutely. It was the first, it was my tournament maiden. My tourney maiden was I played a round one and I qualified. I played another round one and I qualified, and I sent you a message and said, what do I do with two? And then I qualified, and then our love has grown since then.
The rest, as they say, is history. Mike Hogan, I wanted to talk to you about the Breeders' Cup and Breeders' Cup season as it's approaching us now. What if any special preparations do you do at this time of year in advance for a big event like the Breeders' Cup?
Well, you know, I personally will obviously follow the big races. With these two-year-old races especially, I'll keep an eye on some of these maiden races. You know, we've got Kentucky Downs going right now, and you had a number of horses last year. Aeroforce, for instance, broke his maiden at Kentucky Downs. You've got horses that might not be on people's radar that end up jumping into the Breeders' Cup scene. I mean, obviously, that's not going to be the case with the bigger horses. But with some of these two-year-olds, and we're going to cover some of the two-year-olds, especially these Arlington races, there could be ones that you've never heard of that all of a sudden become players.
Yeah, I was wondering that if these Arlington races, and this is the perfect segue to talking about them again, especially since we're a little pressed on time today, could produce a contender for perhaps the juvenile turf more than the juvenile turf races more than the dirt ones. But let's just segue and go right to Arlington. We'll talk about those two races first, then we'll jump over to Kentucky Downs. I don't know, I haven't had a chance to fully handicap the first of the stakes in the all stakes pick four at Kentucky Downs, but if you guys have any thoughts, we can cruise through all four of those races depending on how time goes. But let's start with the Arlington Washington Lassie, 7 furlongs on the wax at Arlington. It goes as the 7th race at 5:26 Eastern on Saturday. Let's change things up, Mike. I want to start with you. Who did you come up with here?
Well, in these races, you get a lot of horses, and I think there's only one of the 11, 12 that have run more than once. So you get a lot of horses that you're trying to figure out what they're going to do in their second career start. And many of the good ones, especially these young two-year-olds, they often win by wiring the field. Now, in this race, we've got a number of maidens, and strangely enough, the maidens are all seem to be coming out of the same race, which was the Arlington 9th on August 27th. I don't want any of those. My approach in these races is I look for a horse, assuming in this 12-horse field, we're not going to have one that wires them. Maybe we do. Maybe we have one of these that's just faster than everybody else. But a lot of times these early two-year-olds win because they just break better and they don't get passed. That isn't always the case going forward. So I look for one that's shown ability to pass horses. There's a couple in here, but I landed on number 12, Benner Island, making the second career start for Brad Cox, won like a good thing, dueling in the stretch with a 50-1 shot, who actually came back to win next out. And there was another next out winner in that field. At Indiana Grand, now stretches out a little bit. Pedigree-wise, we talked about pedigree a little bit before the show. This is a Spitestown out of a grade two winning dam, is half to one that's 5 for 8 sprinting on the dirt. I just love this one. I don't know if we're going to get 5 to 1, but I think she could be a good thing.
I recognize those sounds in the background, Mike, if you have to go check on the situation there. But
no, he's watching a show, and I think he just laughed.
Oh, okay. Very
so it's
good.
A good thing.
That's a good thing. I'm with you on Benner Island. I noticed looking at the form of that Indiana race that not only have two of those come back to win, as you pointed out, but four of them have come back to improve their figures. I was curious. I didn't get a chance to dive into the pedigree, so I'm glad to have that info. My impression was that 7 furlongs on the wax would hit between the eyes based on everything I was seeing. Jonathan, how about you? Are we going to make it 3 for 3 for Benner Island, or do you have something else here?
You know, it's funny. You know, sometimes we step on each other's toes, and then after the show we say, oh, it's okay. It was good radio. So I like looked back to the PPs to try to figure something else out, but I'm on the same horse as Mike and you. So, and then as I was sitting there, Mike was literally saying everything I was going to say. So instead of reiterating it or making up something that's not true, I'm just going to just ride Mike's coattails on this one. The horse makes a ton of sense for me. You know, when a horse wins like that on the dirt, and now he's switching surface with some breeding that suggests that he might like that switch, he's drawn outside to get that kind of trip that we always see these poly horses getting wide and swooping. And like Mike said, he's passing horses. A lot of babies that have won on the front end, they're going to go faster. They're going to look another horse in the eye than they did in their previous starts. I think it sets up well for them. And I would imagine that 5 to 1 is a pipe dream. Not because we
I was going to say, you think we have that much weight in the market, JK? There's going to be some other horses in here who take money. Before we move on from this race, do either of you have anything clever about the one who I'm guessing is going to end up being the favorite, or at least going very close? Number 9, Spirituality. This was another one I was upset that I didn't have the chance to do the pedigree dive on, but I thought just looking at the pace numbers, the Moss numbers, and looking at the buyer, looks like she might take a lot of beating as well. Mike, did you have anything in particular pedigree-wise on Spirituality?
Well, let's see. The dam was an 0-for-5 maiden who never hit the board at Emerald Downs. And from a pace standpoint, you mentioned the pace. Pace came back ridiculously slow. I think she dueled early, put away some overmatched rivals, one like what looked to be a good thing at Delaware. I just don't know if she's as good as what she's going to be facing. You know, she was bet down to favoritism against 5 other horses in her first start. You know, Benner Island was facing 10 horses in that race. I don't know. I hope you're right, Pete, and I hope she takes a lot of money, but she's not for me. The other one I think that's going to take money is number 7, Diadora,
sure,
who is, like Benner Island, one that passed horses, But that was a completely different pace scenario. That race completely melted down. It set up for a closer to come from off the pace. You know, actually, the one that was leading put away the one that was, you know, running second. You know, but it was a really, really fast pace that set things up for a closer. And Diadora just took advantage of it. You know, I don't know. Nobody came back to win next out from the Diadora race, and the horse that ran second disappointed and finished eighth in the next start. And, you know, she's logical, but I think price-wise and just what I'm seeing here, I'm much more for Benner Island.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said about Diadora and that being a setup and a flow downgrade. What I was referring to with the – I agree with everything you said, too, about the slow pace early for Spirituality. I just thought that the way she finished up suggested to me that the conversion to the synth might not be such a bad thing. But anyway, I don't want her at the short price. I'm with Benner Island. We're 3-for-3 on the 7th at Arlington, and let's move it over to the 8th, the Arlington Washington Futurity. Once again, 7 furlongs. This time the boys' version of this 2-year-old fixture. Jonathan, we'll start with you. Who did you come up with here?
Well, I'm gonna own up to my nickname, or my dad's nickname here, of Dusty. You know, this horse, Well Abled, or what, however you want to say.
I'm going to go Well Abled. Right. But
Well Abled, yeah.
Wow, that's good. I told you I had a few drinks last night watching the game. Well, woo, let me take a breath here. All right, now the thing about this one is, well, first off, Jack Jenkins deserves the credit for this. I couldn't talk about the horse without giving him the credit. This horse, he called me before that horse ran on debut, and Jack's one of those guys that if you haven't done this, I've been trying to get better at it, and I've learned it from Jack, is when these babies run, watching their sale works, you know, from you can find them online at a lot of the places, and Jack's got a pretty good eye for it. And he said that was one of the best works he's ever seen. And I remember him telling me that the day before. And him trying to convince me to fly to Arlington that day for the tournament and go all in on this horse. And the horse won for fun at 2-1. It was like free money. So I got a ride with him on this one. He went. They thought enough of him to send him to Saratoga to run him in a stake there. And now he's back here. His figures, in my opinion, lay over the field. And speed of the speed, that's where I'll end up.
Another point about that sale work, you can, even if you don't have access to it, and it's not hard to have access to it, and it's something that I do also recommend you check out. A lot of handicappers love incorporating that into their arsenal. The Naira team, in particular Maggie Wolfendale, Andy Serling, they do a good job analyzing those sale works. But you can kind of just tell when you look at what the horse sold for earlier this year relative to the stud fee. You can see that relationship between those numbers, which you'll see right there in your daily racing form. Shackleford, $20,000. Sale price, $340,000. That kind of tells you, even without looking at that sale work, that it was an awfully good sale work. And I do think that Well Abled is the most likely winner. I did just want to mention a horse that I had a big paddock note on in my formulator notes from the debut at Saratoga. And that's this horse, 747, who is so named because that's what he looks like. Really was one of these talk of Saratoga horses. Travis Stone's probably a low point of the meet was having this thing at 20-1 and open up at 9-5 or whatever it was on
August
20th.
Went off at 7-5.
Yeah, it was. That's right. Might have even opened up shorter. I did not note that. I just said, like, took a ton of money, built like a, oh, I shouldn't say. I guess I'll just say built like a brick structure you might find in a backyard 150 years ago. Horse was really striking, and it didn't seem like 6 furlongs on the dirt was going to be his friend. I think 7 on the synth, we're heading in the right direction. I think the fact that we've got a maiden in a stake against a well-fancied runner like Well Abled, 747 is just one I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. The 7 might not even be long enough based on my own visual impression. But if you need a price in contest, if you already have the protection of the favorite, if you're just looking for a price to mix in and play along with Well Abled, I will also vote for number 4, 747. What do you think, Mike?
You know, I mean, I think, look, Well Abled should win. but he's not going to be 5-2. He might not even be even money. He towers over the field, and if he runs anything close to either of his first two starts, he'll crush this field. But like your 747, Pete, there's a one that's a little bit of a wise guy play for me. That's number two, Brave Benny, who in the debut at Arlington won quite well in a race that came back relatively live, and he beat a next out winner, a couple next out winners, including one that he's going to face in this race in St. Louis guy. From that race, they stepped up into a stakes race at Prairie Meadows. If you watch the replay, he broke slow, he rushed up, he made the ridiculous middle move that never works into a hot pace. The race completely melted down. The favorite did the same kind of move. That didn't work, and it set it up for two horses that were second to last and last to take the race. That's the kind of race I completely cross out and upgrade in the next start. And this horse seems to be working well. It gets back to the synthetic. If he runs anything close to the debut, he could possibly threaten our favorite, Well Able. But it's just those two for me. But I do see your point on 747.
It's one of these cases where you're going to potentially get double-digit odds with Brave Benny on a horse who's actually run the second-best buyer speed figure in the field, I believe, over the surface, no less. I think you make a compelling case, Mike, and he's one I think folks should be looking at as well. We have about 20 minutes left on the show today, the abbreviated version. So let's move on to these Kentucky Downs races. First, I'm just going to ask, we haven't gone over this. Did anybody look at the first race in the pick four sequence, which goes as the seventh?
Yes, toughest race in the sequence, in my opinion.
Jonathan, have you looked at it?
I did not look at it.
No worries.
But I'm looking at it now.
Mike, why don't you give some quick thoughts, and then Jonathan, if you have anything to add from your notes, feel free to do that. But then we'll move through this one rather quickly, and we'll get to the One Dreamer, which is the first of the public handicapper races from Kentucky Downs.
Yeah, it's a fun race. I mean, it's an 8-horse field. It's a mile. Kentucky Downs, crazy course. I can make a case for 7 of the 8. Probably the only one I'd have a hard time making a case for is the Dwayne Lucas, who's trying the turf for the first time. This just kind of seems like a tough spot for that one. But everybody else is somewhat logical. Your favorite is Mike Maker's Watch Your Own Bobber, coming off two straight wins. Mike Maker, Ramsey, I mean, they own this meet. You got two from Wesley Ward in there, including our Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf winner from a couple years ago in Hootenanny, who's coming off a win a week ago at Belterra. I mean, how unfortunate would you be to be a trainer at Belterra and you got a decent horse, you put him in an allowance race, and you're like, I think we've got a chance. And then you look at the entries and you see Hootenanny shows up. I mean, he crushed that field at 1-10. It was strictly a prep. I mean, I think he could run a big race. Ward's other one, Chiltern Street, ran well at the track last year. You've got Ian Wilkes' Thatcher Street, who's never run a bad race seemingly in his whole career. Bill Mott's got a good one in Songstational, and then Dimension has a shot coming from Woodbine last out in a grade two. So I'd go as deep as you possibly could in this one.
All right, let's get on to the formal part of the proceedings with the One Dreamer, the 8th at Kentucky Downs. Unless, Jonathan, you wanted to loop back with anything in race 7, why don't you go ahead and tell us who's going to win the One Dreamer?
Yeah, not on being clever in the race that Mike just talked about. Dissension had a really bad start. I'd watch that race back and take what you will from it. But, you know, I tried to get creative here, and I couldn't figure out if I really just wanted to say this jockey's name or if I really thought the horse was going to win. But I love Flava Flav, and I think that he had an unbelievable meet, and I like the horse. I mean, I remember when that horse won at Del Mar, he ran off the screen like a good thing, and the last race wasn't as good, but they thought enough of the horse to ship him out here. Flav shows up, not that he was going to ride at Low Sal anyways because they don't have grass there, but that's where I landed. Annulment looks tough on figures, but I'm going to give Flav Flav a shot with I'm going to let Pete say the name.
Entreshot, right?
But yeah, well, Entreshot.
Who's one of the – yeah, you're right, no T. For me with Entreshot, there's absolutely a contender, tons of speed in here. The horse I was looking at in terms of if you were looking for a vertical key, I do like the other one Jonathan mentioned, Annulment, just in how well she fits on figures and form and having a pretty sweet race at Kentucky Downs, all things considered. We know she handles the course. But in terms of making a pick on top, the thing that gave me pause about Annulment, the little bit of a nibblery kind of profile, not that exciting at a short price, I was going to maybe take a little shot with a flaky angle on Inside Out, number 5. My logic here being that I think Kentucky Downs, and I was actually talking about this with our friend Mike Maloney this week, is he pointed out that Kentucky Downs can be more of an angles type of a racetrack than a straight up figures and form type of a racetrack for various reasons, not least of which is the unusual configuration. I was putting together a little story about Inside Out coming into hand, improving, and thinking that, you know, how better to prepare for a race on a European-style turf course than to have preparation from an expert European-style trainer who trains on a European-style training center at Fair Hill. So all those things led me to maybe wanting to take a little bit of a shot at the price with number 5, Inside Out, in here. Mike, where did you end up?
Well, you know, this is a very interesting... Can you pause it, Pete?
And that, folks, was the first ever bathroom break in the history of the DRF Players podcast.
Well, mine is still happening. I'm giving a little privacy, and I may be asked to come take a look at it in just a moment. But until then, I will dive into race 8 at Kentucky Downs. This is a very interesting race because you've got a bunch of horses who are coming. There's only one horse in this race coming off a win, which is weird to see at a stakes race. And so, and you've got a bunch of horses that have never won at Kentucky Downs. So you have to figure out who's going to take to the surface and who's in the best form. And I don't want some in bad form at short prices. I agree Entrechat makes sense, but look, she hasn't proven it in stakes company yet. Even Annulment, like you said, Pete, is a bit of a nibbler. I think she makes sense here, but I want one that's going to be a much better price. I think of the shorter prices, No Fault of Mine is the one that makes the most sense to me. Ran well in the Beverly D against much, much better at 48-1. Made a bit of a middle move too. But the two that I would more likely lean on and just hope for something, either in contests or even in the pick four, is number 1, Fleet Birdie, who seems like she's found a new life stepping on the grass. Charlie Lopresti does all right with a grass horse once they get good. Maybe this is just what she wanted from the start, and she could be a good thing here at a nice price. The other one coming out of the Beverly D that I think just made a ridiculous middle move, had no shot at 114-1. Lots of Lex now gets back to a surface where she ran okay, didn't hit the board, but she didn't run poorly the one time she was at in this race last year. In fact, only lost by 3 lengths. I think she could be one to spice things up at a price.
If forced to give one pick, Mike, because I want to definitely be able to – we're not one of these shows where we mention three and then
Fleet Birdie.
One of them wins and we call it the winner. Yeah. We do it that way. So Fleet Birdie,
Fleet Birdie, but I'll be playing her with in the exact as with the other two, for sure.
I have no problem with us mentioning more than one horse. I think that's smart for multis, but I don't want to come on and be like, oh yeah, and Mike had this 10-1 winner, because you guys have been having so many winners just legit, just boom, right on top. There's no need to muddy the waters. That's why I asked for clarification, not trying to give you a hard time there.
No, you got it.
So not trying to give you a hard time this time, I should say. Let's talk about the Kentucky Turf Cup really quickly. Mike, it sounds like you might have some work to do over there. Jonathan and I maybe just go through this quick, and then we'll bring you back in for the last race. The question is simple. Are we looking at the Big Hoss as just a stone-cold single, Jonathan, or is this a case where we see Mike Maker also putting Greengrass of Wyoming in here, and we ask ourselves the question my friend Frank Scatoni likes to ask in these situations, why enter two when one will do?
Well, I would imagine because the purse is so large, and if he can run first and second, he can get himself a new car. So, look, the big hoss, how good has he gotten? I mean, and you look in the dictionary for why Mike Maker is good, or I guess if you look it up on Wikipedia, there should be a picture of this horse. I mean, he claimed this horse, and look what he's turned into. I mean,
since Lava Man.
I mean, I can't and won't try to find a way to beat that horse. I mean, he's something special, and I mean, I don't think he's flincher good, obviously, and I wouldn't place a bet on him against him. But everyone else he's going to show up against in all these other races is one that I would definitely I couldn't get away from.
Mike, would you put 100% of your picks through to Big Hoss, or would you get a little cheeky?
I'm probably more like 80%. You know, I mean, I use the filters at a mile and a half or more. This horse is 6 for 8. His two losses came when he ran third in one race in a graded stakes. And then the other one was in the Breeders' Cup turf. So he wants to go this far. The rest of the field, they're either not as good or I don't know if they want to go this far.
Well, where's the other 20% of your picks going, though?
Well, I think I might just defensively use the other Maker because he's probably the next best horse. The one that interests me just a touch, though, and I forget which one he is. I'm scrolling through to find him. Powerfoot?
Sure.
Is he the one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And I pause because his full brother Power Ped is running in the seventh race that day. So you get to, you know, you could get cute. Same connections and everything. So, Powerfoot just at a price is one that I think wants this distance. He doesn't win very often, but you know, Neil Drysdale does all right when he ships him into Kentucky Downs. So those are probably the only two I'd really just defensively use at all.
All right, Mike, we're going to keep it with you for a quick thought on the 10th race, the Kentucky Downs Ladies Sprint, 6.5 furlongs on the European style turf.
Well, this is another one where there's not really many that have run on the surface before, and most of them are not coming out of wins. What I like in races like this is I don't want the late running sprinters that are stretching out from shorter. I mean, Rumble Doll makes sense. Even Mississippi Delta makes sense. I think she probably is the one that's going to be bet most heavily. She runs well, but, you know, I don't completely trust her. I wouldn't toss her at in the multis, but you know, in this one, I'm going to lean on either number seven Late Spring for Vicky Oliver, but my top pick really, and for contests and for this podcast, is number 8 Seeking Treasure. She cuts back from a nice race. I think they pointed to this race. She loves the Kentucky Downs surface. She hasn't been out of the exact in 2 starts. She missed by just a nose last time in this race last year in the Treasure Exacta, Sky Treasure over Seeking Treasure. I think she's set up. She'll be a good price, and she's who I want here.
Jonathan, how about you?
Story time, and then sentimental pick, and then I'll tell you, not sentimental. I love the horse, but Pete, do you remember? We didn't talk about this. You remember Miss Double Doro, right? The 4-horse?
I do. My eye was immediately drawn to her. I was going to ask you if you could tell me why.
Yeah, when we were at the top of the hill, and I was alive in the pick 4 when we went up to the top of the hill when Lute set us up with the starter out at Santa Anita. As seen on Periscope. We're at the top of the hill. If you didn't see this story, it's actually really funny. We're at the top of the hill, and I'm watching it on my phone. And the starter tells me, oh, the 5's going to win. I'm like, how can you see that? And we were so impressed that he saw it, but really we were so plugged into the phone, he was listening to the call.
It had happened 20 seconds earlier, so
yeah,
she was 3 lengths behind and looked impossible, but in reality she'd already won, and he made us look like the idiots that we were.
Yeah, $50 pick 4 that day, though. It was a good day anyways. I love that filly. If you watch her race 2 back, she was way too far back. Just watch that race. It's just an impressive race to watch anyway. And although there's no uphill situation down the hill at Santa Anita, it still resembles the course at Kentucky Downs enough with the changing elevations that she's obviously one that will like it a little bit. My man Flava Flav is there. I love this filly. She's not the best price in the world, but But she'll come running late, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was kind of with you. I didn't do the 100% job on this and wasn't even necessarily going to chime this in. But I do think, as we've discussed many times, the way that the downhill course at Santa Anita can kind of play long, play a little more like a mile, not unlike a European configuration like this one. Even though the specifics are so different, I do see a world in which, for certain runners anyway, a runner that has the form and figures of Miss Double Doro, that the form from one could translate to the form from another. So there you have it. We're going to do a little production meeting in the middle of the show right now, or production meeting at the end of the show, more like it. I came up with an idea as we were just chatting, and you guys can help me refine it right now, and we're going to turn it into an opportunity for our listeners to win entries into DRF tournament feeder contests. We're going to have to figure out which one and all that later, but here's my idea. I assume you guys, I know you are because you both participated in them, have seen the DRF tournament's plays of the day. You guys been following those every day and happy with how they're going?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I just wish mine were a little better, and I wish I pronounced the name of the horse right. But
no. You can't have it all.
My horse is still running.
Yeah. I didn't do any better. I picked a horse that ran third, not so hot. Well, since we haven't done such a good job, let's give our listeners a chance. And here's what I want to do. Tell me if you guys will think this works. And feel free, you can help me shape the rules, and whatever we say at the end of the show today, those will be the official rules for this contest. You're not supposed to do contests this way, by the way, listeners. You're supposed to actually decide before you announce them. But hey, I'm feeling froggy, so let's jump. And my idea is this. We're going to have people submit like a little written race analysis to podcast@drf.com. And then the choice we'll have to make is if we just want to sort of pick winners based on the quality of the analysis, or if we want there to be a component that the horse picked also has to hit the board, say, or even win. And then, so we'll essentially, you send a pick just on whatever race, has to be before the race is run, I'll stipulate that, to podcast@drf.com. And if you are chosen by us, you will win a feeder entry and have an opportunity to record your very own DRF tournament's play of the day video. Jonathan, your thoughts?
I love it. I love it. And it reminds me of a story an old timer told me before. They used to go to Santa Anita back in the day. He was from Nebraska, and they used to, he had an apartment that could see the tote board. So he had binoculars. So when horses would win, then he would call in bets back in Nebraska.
It's a good way to get your legs
after
broken.
The horses, they're already won. So yeah, so you make sure you don't do that to us. You don't handicap a 20-1 shot and send it at 3:43 when the race was run at 3:42. We'll catch you.
We're sending Mike Hogan after you with a 2x4 if that happens. But Mike, do you like this contest concept? Do you think it works?
I like it. I like the idea of getting more people involved and finding other ways to communicate and interact with the audience, because we do it on Twitter, but I think we can do much more than that. So I just like that kind of thing. So let's come up with a different one every week.
I like it. Well, this is the one we're going to get started with, folks. Send us a pick any race this weekend. We'll try to announce some winners on the Tuesday show. Reach out to you on Monday, hopefully. Just send us a little race analysis. No need to go crazy. These videos are short. They're only supposed to be 30 seconds. You don't have to do this as a video. Just go ahead and write it up. Send it to podcast@drf.com, and we'll choose some winners to do some videos and win some entries into feeders. We'll have to be the ones choosing the feeders for you to make that work out. But whatever. We'll give you something good, I promise. All right, that is about all the time we have. I got to get this piece filed, and we got to get over to orientation, but before we go, another minute anyway, any final thoughts? Mike, we'll start with you.
Well, we didn't mention Phil D'Amato, who's got my year as a day here. I just wanted to say, Phil D'Amato, now that Chad Brown has won a dirt grade one with a male horse, Phil D'Amato is the next one. It's only a matter of time. He's 0-24 in Kentucky. I don't know if my year as a day is going to be the one, but that's one where you look at the stats, it's just a matter of time before Phil wins.
A story to follow for sure. Jonathan, closing thoughts?
Let's see.
You had enjoy all that weekend. Time Mike was talking bet, to do it.
Bet responsibly. Party responsibly. No, that's pretty much it.
Folks, do as he says, not as he does. That's all the time we have on this edition of the RF Players Podcast. I want to thank Mike Hogan. I want to thank Jonathan Kitchen. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for downloading and listening. We will be back next week. Until then, may you win all your photos.